We're going to talk about rate regulation, and I give the floor to Jane.
Thank you very much, Hans. Good afternoon, everybody. As Hans said, we're here today to talk about rate regulation, which is Agenda Paper 9, particularly Agenda Paper 9A, which is a slide deck, and we have three questions within that slide deck to ask you this afternoon. The first one is whether you agree with our recommendation on slide 16 of paper 9A to use the individual timing differences that arise from the rate formula, the rate setting mechanism that affect the future rates as our unit of account for recognising incremental rights and incremental obligations arising from the regulatory agreement. Secondly, then, following on from that, using that unit of account, do you agree with the staff's conclusion on slide 21 that the incremental right is an asset as defined in the soon-to-be-issued conceptual framework? And similarly, then, question three, do you agree with the staff's conclusion on slide 25 that the incremental obligation resulting from the timing differences is a liability again as defined in the forthcoming conceptual framework? The analysis supporting our recommendation and conclusions are quite interrelated, so I don't propose that we split the slide deck up and ask you to discuss each section individually, but I do think it would be helpful if you've got comments and questions, if you can indicate kind of which section of the slide deck we're in, and perhaps try and group your questions into three blocks, which I'll just take a minute or so to highlight the three blocks that I think are natural breakdowns of the slide deck. So in slides 4 to 12, that's where we've provided some background information, a reminder of the objectives of defined rate regulation and how those objectives influence the design of the regulation itself, and particularly the design of the basis for setting the regulated rate. And we describe in those slides 4 to 12, how that rate-setting basis creates a direct and specific cause and effect relationship between the activities of the rate-regulated entity and how those activities are reflected then in the rate that's being charged to customers. Slides 18 and 22 also supplement those background slides, slides 4 to 12, which explain how the operation of the rate formula in that basis creates the timing differences between when an entity fulfills the service requirements that are established by the regulatory agreement and the time when the entity then includes the related compensation in the rates that it charges to customers. As described in slide 10 within those background slides, by applying existing IFRS standards without adjusting for the effects of these timing differences, the entity may, at the end of a reporting period, have some outstanding rights and obligations that it doesn't recognise in its statement of financial position, even though the transaction or other event that's created those incremental rights and obligations may have already occurred. The objective of the model that we're trying to build here is to provide users of financial statements with better information about those outstanding rights and obligations and the related effects of those on the performance that's reported through the statement of financial performance. So that's kind of the first block. If perhaps we can try and clarify any points in that background information that anybody would like clarifying. And the questions then are in the further two sections. The first of those are slides 13 to 16, which explain why we recommend that the model uses as its unit of account the individually identifiable timing differences that create these incremental rights and obligations that affect the future rate. And then the final section, the third section, is slides 18 to 25, which explain why we conclude that those incremental rights and obligations arising from those individually identifiable timing differences do meet the definition of an asset and a liability in the forthcoming conceptual framework. There is an appendix with some numerical examples that demonstrate primarily the information in the background section. Not planning to talk about those specifically, but if anybody does have any clarifying questions, we're happy to address those. So with that, again, if you can just indicate whereabouts in the slide deck you are and try and maybe group into those three sections, it'll help the flow of the discussion. But with that, any questions or comments? So we'll ask the three questions again at the end for your votes.
Amaro?
Comment, not question at this stage. First, I really like the way you organize it. Slides. I think it's important for us to respond to questions, to have this background information, although to outsiders that are following this project, this appears to be not new, but for us, in order to really frame our decision and respond properly to the questions, I think this background information is extremely important, especially the fact to clarify that we are discussing this, although we are not talking about scope now, and you are very clear that scope will be, as you mentioned in paper 9, will be further discussion. It's important for us to really have a sense that the set of entities that we are talking here, they are operating under strict regulatory regimes. So I think this is very important to really help us go through the questions that you are bringing to before us.
Sue?
Okay, so a few observations randomly scattered through your slide deck. So firstly, on the recommended unit of account, this idea of focusing on the individual timing differences that affect future rates, I think that, to me, makes sense and seems to sort of fit most neatly with my understanding, at least so far, in the project of how the adjustment mechanisms actually work. So I'm hopeful that if we follow that approach, it will also sort of link in with operational considerations from the preparer's perspective, which is nice if we can align the accounting with that. Also, what I did like in your slide deck and is the very careful articulation of what it is exactly that we're focusing on in terms of, you know, when you look at the timing differences, when you get to the definitions of assets and liabilities. For me, this very careful articulation that makes it clear that it's the sort of unders and overs, using an imprecise, you know what I mean,
yeah.
Focus really helped me to think through how it then relates to concepts and finally to get comfortable that it does meet the definitions of assets and liabilities, because it makes it very clear that we're really looking at a very particular, I think in this case, accounting construct. We're sort of looking at a strip of cash within a bigger set of cash flows. And that for me helped me get comfortable that we do meet the definitions, because if you look at the liabilities, which I've given you so much grief on in the past, by looking at it as the accounting construct, you can sort of see it as an outflow if you look at it as a bigger overall cash flow and then a negative adjustment. And so for me, the crisp articulation is key to success for getting happy with the conceptual definition.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the articulation, as I'm sure you're aware, we've gone through this so many times, the articulation has changed over time and we've tried to refine it. But if anybody has got suggestions for any further improvements, then we'd be very happy to hear those, because I think, as Sue says, the articulation is absolutely crucial to help people understand what we're trying to do. Thanks, Sue.
Doug?
Thank you. My question relating to the third block, and then come back to the second block, which is the unit of account. And I totally agree with the staff's comment that the RAM meets the definition of the asset. It meets it. But the question is about the liability. So liability, it seems like it meets the definition. However, to me, it sounds like a negative asset rather than single out liability. Because you have already received the money, but you haven't made a performance, then it's a liability. That's in a sense understandable. but it's somehow continuation of the operation. It may happen in the continuation of the operation. Sometimes you overcharge, but you may undercharge. So it's just an adjustment. So can we clearly call it a liability? If you have made a performance, if you have received money quite in advance, like for the investment, if you make a new power plant, power station, and in order to build such a power station, you overcharge for 10 years. Then you got the money, and then build a power station, and start making a power 10 years' time. However, even in that 10 years, you are continuing to operation. So you keep supplying same electricity even after you completed your power station. So then I don't know whether it's quite liability or not, because you are keep charging some rate and keep providing service constant basis. So in a sense, gross up or segregate asset and liability doesn't make much sense. So therefore, then come back to the unit of account. So operationally, I think to make the unit of account as an individual transaction. However, if you look at the nature of the services, so if you try to track everything individual and call it a liability or asset, then it makes the operation more complicated. But rather, I think at least you could call it something like a rate-regulated asset, which could be sometimes negative and plus amount. Such kind of articulation would be much simpler and may work well. That was my impression.
I'm hesitating to respond immediately because I spotted Daryl in particular at one point putting his. So I don't know whether you want other board members to comment.
Daryl, are you going to do the work for Jane?
So, probably what I was going to come in and say that
maybe articulate it better.
I think there may be two parts to the issue that you're raising. I think the one is the practical issue, and that would involve how we go about eventually articulating the mechanisms required to capture this.
Yeah.
I think that sounded like a part of your concern, as you were concerned about the mechanism. And I think that may well end up being a mechanism of thinking about the same calculation just applied differently, or applied with a plus or minus in front of it, depending on the circumstances. I thought it was important for me in reading the definition on slide 25, and I thought that was a good articulation, and I think when Sue spoke earlier about the articulation, I think this slide is really, really important for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've heard frequently about this idea of, is it a negative asset? Do we think about it as a negative asset? And I think the articulation in 25 makes it clear this isn't a negative asset.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because the obligation of the entity is to deliver an economic resource in return for compensation that doesn't fully reflect the value of that economic resource.
Mm.
So the entity has been obliged to deliver something, a liability, and the thing that is going to receive in return for that delivery is not adequate recompense for what it's doing.
Yeah.
And I think that, to my mind, is the definition of a liability.
Yeah.
So that would be from the perspective of, I think, what this presentation or what this paper is attempting to do is to articulate this in the context of the conceptual framework, and I think we get there. In terms of the second steps, which I assume are going to come later when we start talking about the mechanics of how you do the determination, I think the mechanics for purposes of making it easy for people to do may end up being different.
Yeah.
But I certainly found 25 a comforting slide, or a slide that helped convince me of where we were going, and I think it does make the argument for saying this is not a negative asset. And I think then that, along with the comment that Sue made earlier about we are moving away from, well, this unit of account issue becomes particularly important too in this space.
Yeah, I do understand the concept clearly. However, in practice, as I said, power station is operating as usual, and that people are receiving the service as usual and paying the rate as usual. So then, conceptually, it is correct. But if you say you have asset or liability, then you have to, in the end, you have to track, is this liability, repayment of liability, yeah. Or is this the, you know, collection of assets? Yeah. So that doesn't really contribute to the quality of the information. The quality of the information is what is the net balance, is negative basis or, you know, plus mm-hmm. basis, and how much is the money which you owe the service provider, or which you owe the
can I pick up on this as well? Because yeah. I thought this was one of the interesting things that the working group, when we had the working group discussion here, told us, and I think it was a useful addition to the knowledge that we had in terms of the way this works. And essentially, because of the nature of the relationship between the regulator, yes, and yes. The entity, there is a need for individual tracking of these underlying items. Mm-hmm. That individual tracking of these underlying items means that in this circumstance anyway, what we're doing is we are leveraging off the existing information that is already necessary to prove mm-hmm. what your liability and asset mm-hmm. actually are, and that is tracked through time.
Yeah.
I think there is, again, probably a different issue that we're going to have to talk about, which is whether there's a need at some to gross up the asset and the liability, yeah. or whether we would think about this from a presentational perspective as a net.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's probably beyond the ambit, again, of this discussion.
I think maybe it might help in that I very much have the operational issues in mind, and that's in some ways driven the thought processes in that these timing differences are looked at separately and they looked at individually, and although there may be some offsetting or netting to get to an end result, they are looked at as individual things. And the other thing that I had in mind, which struck me as being very similar to, is if we're looking at IFRS 15 in a contract with a customer where you can identify different performance obligations, and you take your overall transaction price and then you assign parts of that transaction price to those different performance obligations. And I'm seeing that, you know, we have two contracts in effect. We've got the contract with the customers, but we also have this regulatory agreement. And the regulatory agreement, as I mentioned in the tee-up, has this direct cause and effect relationship, and it says, of the price that you can charge, of the regulated rate, these are the amounts that relate to these different activities, and that's how we can track them separately and identify the individual timing differences in that way. So I would see it being, certainly on the liability side as well as the asset side, if I've received something through the rate that I've charged this period, and I know what service requirement that amount relates to, if I haven't fulfilled that service requirement yet, I'm going to do it next period. To me, that's very analogous to having a contract liability under IFRS 15, but it's my regulatory liability, not a liability to an individual customer through that contract. But I think the principle is the same. It is breaking down a smaller unit of account from the overall contract with the customer to the individual obligations and the amount of the transaction price relating to those individual obligations. And as Daryl said, the obligation is we have to deliver something in the future for which we're not going to receive compensation because we've already had that compensation in the past.
The only my concern is, are they really clear that they received the money but haven't performed yet?
Yeah. Operationally,
the
message.
As I said, they keep operating. They keep providing, and you need, you know, timing is decided every first day of the month. You check the amount of the power you used.
Yeah.
However, they are not very much clear whether we received the money but haven't provided service. Such kind of idea, do they really have such kind of idea? That is my point.
I think it's important that I'm convinced, especially with the revised new conceptual framework, that it meets the definition of a liability and an asset. I think the symmetry is really nice. Just a couple of reminders. I think the liability need not, it could come as a penalty, right?
Yeah.
They could declare. So the regulator could simply say, you're going to charge less for the next 3 years because you did something not so nice. In which case, there'd be no question of having any payment coming in. So I want to come back to the basic idea is the timing difference, regardless of the source of the timing difference. It need not come from money having got to you early. It might have come from a penalty. So it's nice that the thing's universal. I think liability fits universal much better. So I just wanted to kind of come back to the what I think is the generic issue, which is what I like about this, is that I think the thing can be traced right back to the conceptual framework and flows properly from it. And I think it's really important that it do that, because then it's going to be a very defensible standard going forward when we put it out as whatever we put it out as. So,
when I listen to Daryl articulate why he thinks it's a liability, and then when I articulate what it's a liability and what Tom's articulating, I think we're all saying, yes, it's a liability, but we're all actually using slightly different articulations. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that matters or not, but it does worry me just a little bit. Because the way that, mine might be wrong, but I'm just testing it, and I'm looking at Daryl, because I want Daryl to react to see if he agrees with it. Because I think I'm putting words in your mouth, but what I think I heard you say was you're delivering goods or services for less than you would have charged, right? I'm not focusing on that. I'm focusing the way that I think about it. Maybe they're not inconsistent. Maybe it's just a different articulation of the same thing. Is I'm delivering a service that I would have had the right to charge 100 for, but I'm only allowed to charge 85.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking of the liability as being a sort of notional obligation to transfer 15 back to the counterpart, to somebody.
And I think...
Negative 15. So I'm looking at the sort of artificial construct of a gross obligation of 100 with a contra of 15, and I'm focusing on the contra of 15 being my liability, which I think would work with what Tom just said, because I don't care whether the 15 came as a result of me having received 15 too much in the past, or because I've done something naughty and therefore I'm entitled to 15 less this period, but I'm focusing on the minus 15 as opposed to linking it to services that I should have got 100 for.
I think the important thing is sort of paging back one slide then to slide 24, where we talk about the definition of a liability. And that definition talks about the liability as a present obligation to transfer an economic resource.
Yes, and I've got a notional
and
transfer.
So it's I have to transfer something, and I don't know if it makes much of a difference in terms of thinking, but I'm transferring something, and I'm getting something in return for what I'm transferring, but that something in return is less than the value of the thing I'm giving up. Yep. And so it's that transfer for, whereas I think what you're focusing on is the difference between the two. I think I'm also focusing on the difference of the two, but I'm thinking about it as I'm giving up something worth 100. I'm only getting something worth 85. I'm obliged to give up that value of 100. And I think
I'm focusing on the fact that I've got in an accounting construct sense, obligation to transfer 15.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think the net effect...
Because I think if you start looking at, am I getting value, you can have people that are charging different amounts. I could still be getting 85... If I charged 100, I might have been getting a really, really big profit. And if I charge 85, I may still be getting a profit. That's where I start to come unstuck, because I'm still be getting enough value of 85 relative to the services deliver. But that's why I want to focus on the 15.
Okay. Well, I mean, the way I tend to think about it is that the thing that I'm giving up, the resource that I have, is actually has a value. And I'm being obliged to give it up in return for something that is less than that value. But I can see how you can get, I can see your answer as well.
I think Daryl's just pointed out slide 24, which is the definition of that's in the conceptual framework, and I don't think the wording has changed for quite a while. And I think it does in this case, and Tom, I thought, articulated it very well, is it links together the fact we've either obtained a benefit already, which is we've received some payment up front, or we've taken an action which could be the penalty kind of scenario, and it's as a consequence, and we've highlighted on the slide, as a consequence, we've got to transfer something that we wouldn't otherwise have had to transfer. And I think it does work both ways. We're either transferring the 15, to use Sue's number, or we're transferring something that should have been worth 100, but we're only going to get 85 for it now, and the difference is 15. But I think the important messages are going back into the wording in 24, slide 24, which we have again, it's this cause and effect relationship. Because something has happened, we end up, as a consequence, having to transfer something out.
Mary?
I feel like I was very slow in the pickup of what I now see as a major conceptual point, and that is the unit of account discussion, which you've included in slides 14, 15, 16. We kind of came to unit of account as a separate discussion kind of late, relatively speaking. And I think it's a really, really important one, and we should make sure that we hear from board members about this conclusion rather than only jumping to the asset and liability definition. Because if I look at slide 15, and the three possibilities you lay out there, I think, as you say, we have made a decision that we're not going to go the single item, the regulatory agreement. But I think we're in the kind of project where we have to go back and, test those earlier discussions. And the analysis that you have here and the background information absolutely reinforces to me that it's right to discard, the first single intangible, because that comes back to valuing the business as a whole. I don't see the merits, the usefulness of any information that would say the typical intangible accounting of cost for the item, recognize consumption of the item, and don't remeasure it. And I think if we were remeasuring, it would have to be to value, rather than accounting for the transaction. So I have reaffirmed the conclusion that we reached earlier on the basis of our first DP. And then, so I think, as you say, the issue becomes the middle one or the right-hand one. And certainly from all the information we have, and in terms of what we're trying to account for, I think it all lines up. I think the analysis of what we have in the to-be-issued conceptual framework on slide 14, especially the first two points about whether the subject of separate transactions and expiring in the same or different patterns, are particularly important in driving me to the conclusion that it's the individual items, because really what we're trying to account for is the mismatch in timing between when I perform certain activities and when I am entitled to charge amounts for those activities I conducted. And while they may all be put together in a single rate that the customer sees as a single item, I think they, what we've heard time and again is, with rare exceptions, they're built, the amounts are built up of this action, this action, this action, this action, this action, not considering all the things you're going through will give you an increase of X or a decrease of Y. And understanding where you are and thinking about whether you have to adjust the different amounts because it was based on an estimate of how long it's going to take you or how much it's going to cost you or something like that is important. So that, that thinking about the usefulness of the information, thinking about the criteria we set out, drives me very much to the individual items. And that to me is in large part the answer to Tok's challenge with respect to the liability and why is it a liability as opposed to a negative asset. And it's saying that part of what, a customer was charged for in the current period is something that I have not delivered yet, and I want to keep track of that separately from increases for, let's say, increases in rates for increases in input costs, you know, raw materials, et cetera. So the general comment I have is, let's make sure in this discussion that we either are or are not on the same page about unit of account. And if we are all on the same point about unit of account, and it is, as the staff recommends, the individual timing differences, I think it's then more a matter of going through the definitions of assets and liabilities and saying, is there anything when you put these individual items through the asset liability test that causes you to go back and say, do I have to rethink this? To me, there's not, but I think it's important that we step through it that way. And I think the kind of third test of the outcome that we have to do is saying, yeah, this may be great in theory, but is it so costly or non-operational that we have to think about a different way of coming at it? And certainly, and I'm thinking in particular of our last consultative group meeting and the feedback you gave on that, I don't remember if it was January or December board meeting, what was very much that this is how the records are kept for regulatory purposes. That isn't the reason we're going this way, but I think it answers what would otherwise be a big question we were trying to answer in outreach. It's what we heard at a high level on the request for information in the DP and had reaffirmed when we asked very, very specific questions from our consultative group that this is the way they build up the calculation of the rate adjustment, and so therefore it's absolutely operational. And so that's not a barrier. It's not the reason we're doing it that way, but it's not a barrier to doing what the staff analysis says is the unit of account. So, sorry to go on for a bit, but I at first I didn't think we needed this analysis, and then once we had it, I came to realize how important it was. So I want to make sure that we have a clear direction from the board on that.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
Okay.
Is it worth then going to slide 16 and asking the question then on the unit of account? So slide 16 asks whether you agree with our recommendation that we do use as the unit of account the individually identifiable timing differences as we've described them.
Just, it's quick.
Would anybody like then to raise any additional points on the asset or liability definitions before we go for the vote? Okay, so slide 21, is the regulatory right an asset as defined in the forthcoming conceptual framework? 14. Thank you. Similar question. Question number slide 25. Same question, but on the liability. So, is the regulatory obligation a liability? And 14 again. Mary's just shot me a look across the road, and I am going to shut up and run as fast as I can. Before you have a chance to change your mind.
Okay, Jane, you
thank you very much.
We'll finish it off. Make the sale.
Please a cake now. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.